Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
All right. The World Cup final is nearly here. So whilst we've got a few days to ponder on that World Cup final, we're going to take you back in time to the not too distant past with a couple of rewinds before we preview Sunday's final. First, we're going to take a look at 1998 to 2006, the brilliance of Zidane and Ronaldo, the golden generations of England and Portugal. The miraculous headbutt from Zidane and all so much more in between. Let us get stuck straight in, shall we? Around the time that the World Cup was expanded once again to the format that we all currently know and love, to 32 teams, 8 groups of 4, a last 16, perfection World Cup, given the quality of football had risen dramatically through a whole host of reasons, financial expansion and of course formations of certain leagues. Most notably the Premier League, of course. France were given the World Cup for the first time since 1934, beating Morocco to it and barring the greatest tournament on earth from being held in Africa for the time being. More on that one tomorrow. Since it has come out that every effort was made to part Brazil and France until the final, which, of course, with FIFA controlling the draw, came to pass. We had a few debutants as well, Croatia, Jamaica, Japan, all in Group H. Meanwhile, South Africa were in with France and Denmark. Surprise names that weren't here that had been almost ever present in the not-too-distant past were the likes of Uruguay, Sweden, Russia, Ireland and Czech Republic. Meanwhile, Portugal, surprisingly, was still missing despite the golden generation that they had on their hands. This World Cup, it's all about the pact of non-aggression between USA and Iran in the group stages. It's about David Beckham and Michael Owen bursting onto the scene. It's about Scotland not getting out of a group stage, unfortunately, again in their so far final World Cup. It's Davor Suker, Batigol, Christian Vieri, Marcelo Salas and Thierry Henry. Most importantly, though, it's R9 and it's Laurent Blanc kissing Fabian Barthez's head before every match. So speaking of the favourites, right, well, may as well get started with Brazil. They had Ronaldo, Rivaldo, Cafu, Roberto Carlos. They were the reigning Copa America champions. They were the reigning world champions. Yet something that would probably bar them from winning this tournament was that they had left star striker Romario at home in spite of the stupendous brilliance of Ronaldo. More on that one later on. They were made to work for their opening win against Scotland in the opening game only, winning the game courtesy of a bizarre own goal very late on. Morocco's win came easier and a failure to beat Norway had both Norway and Brazil into the last 16. Brazil had already confirmed top, so a loss against Norway wasn't too much of a bad thing for the Seleção. Ronaldo had promised so much in his spells at Barcelona and Inter Milan. He hadn't fully come to the fore yet, but then against Chile in Paris in the last 16, bagged two goals and was unstoppable, absolutely unstoppable. Rivaldo scored two in an incredibly competitive quarter-final with Denmark, and Ronaldo starred once again. And by this point, Brazil well on their way to retaining the trophy. Denmark, they had started slowly with the Laudrup twins, Peter Schmeichel, etc., and taking 4 points from Saudi Arabia and South Africa. But, like Brazil, came alive in the knockout phase, the first round at least anyway, sticking four past a very decent Nigeria team, who had made the same stage, of course, let's not forget, in 1994. And since then, they had become Olympic champions when they won big in Atlanta. Brazil would capitalise on Netherlands' poor penalty shootout record to make it through the semi-final. Of course, meanwhile, this means Scotland wouldn't make the knockouts, especially once Duncan Ferguson was ruled out, especially once they refused to take Ali McCoys despite his good form. And speaking of the Dutch, well, they had the De Boer twins, they had Dennis Bergkamp, Patrick Kluivert, Edgar Davids, Clarence Seedorf, and unfortunately, outside of a 5-0 thrashing of South Korea, they had taken quite a while to come alive. But in the knockout phase, they ground out a win over Yugoslavia with a late goal from Edgar Davids and, of course, ground out another 2-1 win in the quarterfinals thanks to a late goal, this time from Dennis Bergkamp, which, rivaling a goal that Argentina conceded the prior round, maybe goal of the tournament. Dennis Bergkamp was elusive at this time and was incredible, wasn't he? England, they left out Paul Gascoigne. Glenn Hoddle left out David Beckham until the Colombia match on match day three, where he was desperately needed and scored a iconic free kick and the first World Cup goal he would score across three tournaments, of course. England were harking back to 1990 and parts of Euro 96 by playing a three-at-the-back system, but unfortunately struggled defensively. Argentina, they had comfortably seen off three debutants in Group H, and they survived Michael Owen's wonder goal in the last 16, and therefore that was my first footballing heartbreak, one of the first few matches I can personally remember after watching the England versus Tunisia game at school. Obviously that broadcast was started with the famous Des Lynam line of shouldn't you be at work, and we watched it in reception, so I would have been 5 at that time, just about to go into my second year at primary school, and was allowed to stay up to watch the Colombia game. I tend to think that was an evening kickoff. I don't know what day it was, to be honest with you, but I do remember the Argentina game as well, being allowed to stay up for that one as well, because it was an iconic game, probably the game of the tournament for Argentina. Daniel Passarella was the manager. You've got the likes of Gabriel Batistuta, Ariel Ortega, Juan Seba Verón as well, but of course they wouldn't survive that ridiculous 90th minute winner in Marseille for the Netherlands against Bergkamp, but were gearing up to be, well, at least looking like one of the favourites. And had Argentina won that quarterfinal, we would have had one hell of a semi-final with Brazil and all South American tie, much like the 1990 last 16. For the Dutch, much was expected of them, of course, with the Ajax successors in the mid-90s. Fortunately, they were missing the likes of Philip Cocu and Ronald de Boer in the semi-final, And with the likes of Gus Hiddink as manager, Edgar Davids, Patrick Kluivert, they were expected to do quite well in a semi-final for the Dutch, only being beaten on penalties by Brazil. Is quite a good turnout, really. And obviously, they had been eliminated by Brazil in the prior tournament, and Brazil went on to win it, of course. France, we may as well start with the hosts here as well. They kept a lot of their European Championship squad from 2 years prior, which reached the semi-finals, of course, under Aime Jacquet, and they were a long time unbeaten. Of course, that team of Euro 96 with the likes of Zidane, Djorkaeff, Thuram, Lizarazu, Blanc was added to with the likes of Fabien Barthez in net, Thierry Henry up front as well. They eased to their first 6 points, and that was despite Zinedine Zidane's red card against Saudi Arabia. He wouldn't be back until the quarter-final against Italy and scored in the penalty shootout against the Italians, and we'll probably end this episode with something similar along the lines, but that was a quarter-final that was achieved after France had toiled against Paraguay. First World Cup golden goal winner there, and that was from the unlikeliest of names, Laurent Blanc. And another unlikely winner was for France in the semi-finals as well, as Lilian Thuram scored his only 2 international goals ever, and that's across 140-plus games for France. And that turned around a very tricky Croatian challenge. Much was said of the fact that Stefan Grivac hadn't scored in the tournament yet, despite playing centre-forward. And nowadays, that would be probably acceptable. He was hardly playing a false nine withdrawn forward role, but he did allow for the likes of Zidane, Djorkaeff, Henry as well to flourish. And it was Croatia in the semi-finals who had overcome quite a slapdash German side who were warned of their own shortcomings by Bertie Vogts. And prior to this tournament, they would do something about it, the DFB. For Croatia, Alan Boksic was injured but didn't miss him because they had Davor Suker up front, and he would eventually win the golden boot there. And of course, Robert Prozinecki, who won the Young Player of the Tournament for Yugoslavia in 1990, was also a survivor of that World Cup, and Slaven Bilic was the main man in defence. The bleached hair came out for Romania in the last 16 against Croatia, but unfortunately it wouldn't be reflected in the last 16, and Croatia would go through to face Germany, as mentioned, and Germany were missing the likes of Matthias Sammer through injury. Lothar Matthäus, you could argue, was past it, and Jürgen Klinsmann was in his last few games ever, so it really is, as Vogts warned, an ending of an era with not too many great players in the next generation, really. They'd managed to topple a decent enough Yugoslavia in the groups, obviously ravaged by their dissolution, but they still had Mijatovic and Mihailovic. Unfortunately, very little else, and they were beaten in the last 16, of course. Italy, they had, for once, a glut of forwards, which we'll see throughout this this episode of the World Cup Rewind. First and foremost, of course, the fallen hero of 1994, Roberto Baggio, and he would atone for his penalty.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The errors, he scored quite late on against Chile to salvage a draw in the groups and scored in the penalty shootout against France. Unfortunately, Italy wouldn't atone for their penalty errors, just as in 1990 when they lost to Argentina in the semi-final, just as in 1994 when they lost to Brazil in the final. The likes of Luigi Di Biagio and Albertini as well, they missed crucial spot kicks, and it would be a third World Cup in succession that Italy would miss out on via penalties. They've got good at penalties since, unfortunately, from an England perspective. And it was Cesare Maldini who was the coach these days after Arrigo Sacchi's disastrous Euros, where Italy bowed out of the group phase. And here they were fairly fortunate to get to the quarterfinals and beyond Norway, a very strong Norway team as well. Alessandro Del Piero was out of form, and Norway had a lot of decent talent. Torre André Flo, you've got Lennardsen as well, you've got Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as well, obviously. A couple of unfortunate casualties alongside Norway was Spain, of course, shockingly eliminated from the groups under Javier Clemente's management. And the 1994 lot from the quarterfinal exit were used as opposed to the new blood of Luis Enrique and Raul, and bowed out to the likes of Nigeria. So we get to the final. It's France versus Brazil, the wet dream of a final that FIFA wanted, the best team in the world versus the host. Everything was gearing towards a Brazil win. They had Ronaldo, of course. That superseded absolutely everything. And I remember this is the fourth football match I can remember. Again, was allowed to stay up late. It was the World Cup final, after all. I'm pretty sure it would have been a Sunday night. Remember watching the build-up, and obviously the main event was Ronaldo. It was Zidane, France, Brazil. But Ronaldo wasn't part of the main event. I went for a bath and came back downstairs, and Ronaldo was in the team, and I wasn't really sure if that was the done thing or whether this was normal, but obviously the constant cutting to Gary Lineker in the stadium, to Des Lynam in the studio, I remember quite vividly, and the Brazilian team didn't play as a result anywhere like they would have done had Ronaldo been fully fit. Now, of course, we know that, or it's highly received that Ronaldo suffered a seizure in the build-up to the match, and whether it was pressure to play Ronaldo because he is the best player in the world by, not by some distance, but, you know, healthy distance to Zinedine Zidane at this time, they just didn't. As a team, none of them played well enough. Obviously, Ronaldo didn't really get into the game at all, and it was Zidane who finally fulfills his promise. He didn't do too great at Euro 96, but he was obviously fairly young there, and here he scores two headers, two cab and copy headers from corners, and Brazil simply swept aside, and France, the right champions, really, if you take the final into consideration. And again, maybe if Romario was on the plane, they wouldn't have been as much pressure to field Ronaldo. Romario could have come in. Now, of course, by 1998, Romario was not so much a shell of 1994 Romario, but certainly a downgrade on 1998 Ronaldo. And perhaps if Romario had gone, he would have been a suitable replacement. But still, maybe Brazilian officials, manager would have probably gone with Ronaldo in the end, anyway. Would Ronaldo have his day in the sun? Now, of course, he had a World Cup winner's medal from 1994, but didn't play. 2002, the World Cup, the first World Cup of the 21st century, was just around the corner, and he had barely played any games of football in between. Would he be able to right the wrongs of 1998? Well, we'll find out after this short break. Welcome back. FIFA president Sepp Blatter wanted to take the World Cup truly around the world, and whilst that is commendable in and of itself, we'll probably get onto reasons in the coming days with the rewind, and obviously probably have done in the coverage of Qatar here. Might not have done things in the right way. Regardless, the World Cup was finally on Asian soil. The first joint hosts were selected in 1996 after Japan and South Korea merged in the face of a third Mexican bid to host the World Cup. We had several debutants and several shocking casualties. One pleasantly surprised in Senegal, one was quite unfortunate in Ecuador. Meanwhile, China and Slovenia were relatively poor. China were managed by our old friend Bora Milutinovic, and the fifth nation he took to a World Cup, and unfortunately China bowed out with three shocking displays. Not at the tournament were the Netherlands, who were stunned by Jason McAteer, and the Dutch at Lansdowne Road. We had Romania missing out, beginning their long exile, Colombia too, Bulgaria, Morocco and Norway as well. Since then, only the Netherlands, Colombia and Morocco have returned to the World Cup. Back to the tournament with Turkey after missing the World Cup since 1954. And Portugal, they were back too. Their first World Cup since 1986. This World Cup, it's all about DeMarcus Beasley having a piss on the sidelines. It's about the sweaty Jose Camacho as Spain coach. It's Rivaldo clutching his face when he got hit in the knee to get a player sent off. It's Pauleta not living up to expectations but also scoring a hat-trick. It's Roy Keane, it's Saipan, it's Robbie Keane being the hero against Germany, it's Miroslav Klose turning up as well on the world stage, it's the return of Ronaldo, it's Arjun Wang, Beckham's Argentine redemption, it's Torsten Fring's handball against the USA, Senegal, Turkey, South Korea and USA, the minnows in the quarterfinals, relatively of course. But the favourites? Well, it probably wasn't Brazil, despite retaining quite a lot of their 1998 team that ought to have really been victorious and adding to it with the likes of Lucio and Ronaldinho. The main reasons they weren't deemed to be favourites was the fact that they had steamed through three managers since the prior World Cup, since Ronaldo had barely featured for his national team. Unfortunately, for the rest of South American qualification, they had been saved by Luis Felipe Scolari and Brazil's perpetual run at qualification to the World Cup was confirmed, and Ronaldo was returning for the tournament. They'd made a fist of qualification, and it was a far from vintage Brazil that had barely broke into a sweat before the quarterfinal. Of course, we had Rivaldo, let's be honest, cheating to get a second Turkish player sent off in quite a close encounter there. And obviously with Costa Rica and China, the other opponents in the group, Brazil were always going to qualify. But it was Carlos, Ronaldinho, Rivaldo, Ronaldo, all-star. And yes, Ronaldo, despite playing some 30 games in 4 years, was fit and firing, it seemed, and he scored the winning goal against Belgium in the last 16. Turkey, though, it would prove would be the somewhat of a dark horse with the likes of Umit Davala, Hasan Şaş and Hakan Şükür, and they were fairly strong, perhaps benefited too from this simple draw. But as the likes of Spain and Italy, who were facing one of the co-hosts in the other half of the draw, just as Turkey did against Japan in the last 16, the co-hosts weren't a joke, and Turkey were the only team to get through against the co-hosts compared to Spain and Italy in the top half of the draw. They beat Japan in the last 16, and Senegal in the quarterfinals too. Senegal in the quarterfinals, they were at their first ever World Cup just 6 months after almost winning the African Cup of Nations but bowing out to the continent's strongest team in Cameroon. Senegal here, though, they had helped eliminate France by one of the biggest shocks in World Cup history, with the likes of El Hadj Diouf running the channels, Papa Bouba Diop scoring the iconic goal for the Senegalese. You've also got Salif Jow in there, and you've also got the likes of Aliou Cisse in there as well. The iconic quartet for Senegal, and they just shocked the world. Went through the group stage undefeated, a fairly strong group as well when you consider France were reigning champions of the world who bowed out. You also had Denmark, a very, very strong Denmark, who were former European champions, of course. And then you had Uruguay. Whilst their two World Cups were some way back, still a decent enough team with the likes of Diego Forlan in there as well. Turkey proved quite a bigger test for Brazil in the semi-finals compared to the group stage, of course, but it was Ronaldo's toe poke that sealed it. And by this point, it was fairly obvious that Ronaldo was unstoppable. He was going to win the Ballon d'Or, the Golden Boot, probably ought to have won the Golden Ball as well. The only team that he didn't score against, the mighty England in their golden generation. But unfortunately, Rivaldo capitalised on David Beckham's timid challenge in his own half, and Ronaldinho capitalised on David Seaman's failure to jump. It was the golden generation's first chance gone, but a fairly youthful golden generation with some key players missing, Gary Neville and Steven Gerrard as well, and one big name still to come through the ranks, which we'll of course discuss another day, maybe later on today in fact. Brazil's final opponents were Germany, whose hopes were rested almost entirely on Oliver Kahn in goal, Michael Ballack in midfield, and Miroslav Klose up front. Michael Ballack, though, would miss the final through suspension, and even despite losing 5-1 in Munich to England, the ultimate humiliation, they had squeezed through into the final. They'd got through Ireland, Cameroon, Saudi Arabia. Miroslav Klose scoring three headers against Saudi Arabia in a damning 8-0 win. But their knockout stage run was probably as easy as a run to the World Cup final as you're ever going to get. Paraguay, although fairly decent, Germany squeezed through against them just as France did in 98 before winning the tournament. And they were incredibly lucky against America in the quarterfinals. But thanks to Michael Ballack's goal, despite being suspended, and one hell of a performance from the midfielder, they beat co-host South Korea, which, of course, the likes of Spain, Italy, more fancied European nations couldn't do. Between Euro 96 and hosting the World Cup in 2006, this was probably the outlier for Germany. They, of course, were humiliated by Croatia in the quarterfinals in 98. They went out of the European Championships groups either side of this World Cup. And finally, thanks to the power of hosting the tournament, got quite far in 4 years' time. Paraguay might have beaten them had Nelson Cuevas been fit or Roque Santa Cruz not gone out for injured in the last 16. And, of course, Torsten Frings probably should have been sent off for handball on the line. And South Korea, of course, had controversially dredged themselves into the final four. They'd not won a World Cup match prior to this tournament. And in the group, anything was really possible as they were top seeds. And whilst Portuguese may feel aggrieved with how they'd beaten them, but I think probably just that South Korea qualified instead of Portugal. Spain and Italy, on the other hand, you'd feel slightly aggrieved if you went out of the World Cup the way Italy did. Francesco Totti booked for diving, sent off for diving rather. But it was a World Cup, really, that Italy failed to take their chances right across the board. And Christian Vieri more than had enough chances against South Korea to put the game to bed before Perugia striker An Jun-Wang was scoring the golden goal that knocked Italy out of the tournament. And of course, his contract was teared up on the spot. Spain were probably the harshest done by, to be honest. They disallowed some incredibly obvious goals and ultimately lost on the penalty shootout there. If you're going to fix the World Cup, maybe have South Korea beat Spain in normal time and not have to rely on what some people call a lottery with the penalty shootout. But in reaching the quarterfinals, I think football mania had swept over Far East Asia, just as it had tried to do in the United States. In terms of some of the dark horses and some of the failures of this World Cup, let's first look at Sweden, with the likes of Freddie Ljungberg, Svensson, Alexanderson, of course, as well. America were fairly strong, with the likes of Gio Reyna, you've got DeMarcus Beasley, and of course, Landon Donovan. Unfortunately for Sweden, Ljungberg would limp out injured, and despite getting the better of Argentina in the group, topping the group of death with Nigeria, Argentina and England, of course, they went out to Henri Camara and Senegal in the last 16. No small feat for the Senegalese there. Sweden were probably one of the stronger teams at this World Cup. I always reference it. I don't know if it's pertinent or whatever, but the 2002 FIFA World Cup game, in its opening montage with the video game footage, shows a list of, well, essentially shows a few animations of teams winning and lifting the World Cup. And alongside, you have the usual suspects, your Argentina, Brazil, France, Germany, Italy, etc., etc., etc. Even England are in there. And Sweden were one of the last ones in there. So that shows that maybe the developers, EA, were confident that Sweden had quite a good chance of fulfilling that promise and lifting the World Cup. Such was their strength, but ultimately it was a last 16 exit. France and Argentina were the two favourites, and Portugal were probably amongst the dark horses, considering that they had spent quite some time away from the World Cup, but had been at successive knockout phases in the Euros, quarterfinals in 96, semifinals in 2000, were only stopped by a golden goal in that particular tournament. But all three were out at the group stages. Argentina, it could be argued that they were out, understandably, in the group of death, but ultimately the game that they would be ruined would be the 1-0 defeat to England and David Beckham's penalty on 44 minutes. Portugal, they were poor against South Korea. They were deserving of their two red cards in that particular game. And of course, France, they were the first champions of this century to go out in the groups while defending the trophy. And we'll, I'm sure tomorrow, be talking more and more about the World Cup curse. But they were the first champions not to score a single goal in trying to defend the trophy. Meanwhile, Italy, well, they were incredibly fortunate to get out of the groups. They were saved by Ecuador, of all teams, who won their first ever World Cup game against Croatia whilst they were struggling against Mexico and Croatia, only getting a point from them and beating Ecuador to essentially go through. So with all that cleared up, we've got the final. Brazil, Germany, the two most successful teams, Italy aside, in terms of the World Cup. Two most consistent World Cup sides, I would say. It was missing a Michael Ballack, in my opinion, in the outfield for Germany. Oliver Kahn, the best player winner, of course, and ultimately drops a clanger, allowing Ronaldo to break the deadlock. And with such a long list of early exits from the elite, the Champions League format was blamed, and that would be abolished from the following year as a result. This was a fairly poor final, and Brazil, it can't be argued, were the rightful winners, just as France probably were, especially in the final in 1998. In terms of Brazil here, there was no one really in this tournament that lived up to them, really. They had the best player in the world, the best performing player in the world. You had Rivaldo and Ronaldinho behind Ronaldo as well, and of course Carlos and Cafu. It wasn't a vintage Brazil team. You'd probably cast your minds back to the likes of Pelé, Garrincha and Vavá from those first two World Cup successes, and the 1970 team, we all know about their virtues and being one of the greatest teams, international or club, ever built. And they rightly are probably held in the greatest esteem, obviously alongside 1982 in terms of glorious failure as well. But this one probably will be forgotten, blurred by the time, by the likes of the earlier wins and the Garrinchas, Vavas and Pelés, despite having a collection of incredible players of their own, Ronaldo, Rivaldo and Ronaldinho. And they will be back hoping to be in a fourth World Cup final in a row come 2006. And we'll find out if they could do it after this short break. Welcome back. The World Cup was returning to Europe after 8 years away, and Germany beat out the likes of England, South Africa and Morocco to host in the tournament. And at the tournament we had a raft of debutants, a lot of them from Africa as well, including Togo, Angola, Ghana and the Ivory Coast, as well as Trinidad and Tobago. And you can easily count the likes of Serbia, Montenegro and Ukraine in there, as they were, of course, nations of former empires, unions prior to this. Which meant, with a lot of surprise African qualifiers, it meant that quite a lot of big names weren't here from the biggest continent on earth. Nigeria, Cameroon, Senegal, probably the three best performing African nations at the World Cup so far. None of them were here. Uruguay failed again. Turkey, after such a great World Cup in 2002, failed. So did Greece, the European champions, Egypt, the African champions, and the likes of Belgium, who would begin a slow descent for quite some time, and Denmark as well. Back in the fold was Australia, who hadn't been at the World Cup for 32 years. This is their second tournament, and they have been ever-present ever since. This is a World Cup of Fernando Torres, Rooney, Adriano, Miroslav Klose, Luca Toni, Lucas Podolski, David Villa and Hernan Crespo. Some experienced names, but a lot of fresh new attacking talent. It's Graham Poole's three red cards, three yellow cards. It's three Switzerland missed penalties in the last 16. It's the fights of Argentina and Germany, of Portugal and the Netherlands. It's Cambiasso scoring the greatest team goal. It's a certain headbutt from a man in Le Bleu colours. And let's start with France. A much changed team and a shining example of that will be Frank Ribéry, of course. Zinedine Zidane was playing his last ever football matches as a professional, and it didn't start all too great. They were, of course, coming off the humiliation of losing to Greece in the European Championship quarterfinals, and two draws against Switzerland and Sweden, with Zinedine Zidane booked in both matches, had him banned for the third match of this group phase, and potentially could have already played his final game. Needless to say, his pals dug him out of a hole as they helped beat Togo, but only in the second half through goals from Thierry Henry and Zinedine Zidane. Emmanuel Adebayor not able to get Togo into the last 16 of the World Cup. From then on for Zidane, it was Russian roulette, and like in the World Cup knockout stage beforehand, like in the European Championships knockout stage in 2000, Zinedine Zidane came up tops. A goal and an assist in a 3-1 win over Spain, which finally looked as though, with David Villa and Fernando Torres and the likes of Xavi, Iniesta, Puyol, they looked to be finally getting over the hurdle of the last 16 of the quarterfinals, but ultimately fell to the mercurial Zidane. And Zidane got a man of the match and the assist in the 1-0 win against Brazil, a very top-heavy Brazil. Adriano, Kaká, Ronaldo, Ronaldinho. And then Zidane scored the only goal of a fairly tense semi-final against Portugal as well. Portugal, they had survived literal battles, the Battle of Nuremberg, as it is known, against the Dutch in the last 16, after quite a serene group against Angola, Iran and Mexico. Now, the Battle of Nuremberg doesn't really hold up to the previous World Cup battles of Bern, Bordeaux and Santiago. This one, there was no real punching, no violence. It was football violence on a different scale, but still, a very card-happy referee, Valentin Ivanov, who was son of his namesake, Valentin Ivanov, the former World Cup Golden Boot winner. He dished out 16 yellows and 4 reds, which hasn't really come close in terms of disciplinary measures. Maybe 2010 World Cup aside, in quite a fiery game, but that was a one-off. This World Cup was catastrophic in terms of its refereeing, in terms of a yellow card, red card count stand. It was disastrous, really. And the refereeing in that game wasn't particularly great. I would seek out Mark Lawrenson's commentary for that one on the game between Portugal and the Netherlands, which Portugal won out in, of course. Pauleta and Helder Postiga never really fulfilling their potential up front. Nuno Gomes had a good year of 2000, but outside of that, very little else. But you have a progression from that golden generation. We now have Deco, we now have Ronaldo as well, Costinha also going alongside old names such as Luis Figo. It was certainly the golden generation, the best that Portugal would perform in a World Cup since 1966, and it atoned for the failure of 2002. Of course, they would grind out another penalty shootout win over England, because this is the mid-2000s and it's a quarter-final, and by doing so, they had replicated the great Eusebio team in 66. For England, once again, well, it was just the same old story, wasn't it? They were in full strength after missing the likes of Gerrard and Neville from the 2002 World Cup. They had added to their list of superb names with Wayne Rooney, who had a stupendous European Championships 2 years prior. But unfortunately, having broken his foot at Stamford Bridge a couple of months out from the tournament, he wasn't fully fit, and that would have probably played into the frustration of not scoring a goal at the World Cup, not getting onto the pitch until the second game as well, and obviously the stamp against Ricardo Carvalho in the quarterfinals was the turning point, and the injuries of Michael Owen in the game against Sweden in the group stages, and the injury of David Beckham earlier on in the quarterfinal just a round after. He had become the first Englishman to score in 3 World Cups. The unlikely finalists were perennial slow starters, Italy. They were led by Marcello Lippi, who were recovering from their disappointments of 2002 and 2004, and through a raft of defensive changes were probably the most defensively astute team in the history of the World Cup, and that is so Italian. You have the likes of Gianluca Zambrotta switching flanks to be dropped in for Christian Zaccardo. Christian Zaccardo, of course, scoring the the only goal that Italy conceded from open play in this tournament, and it obviously came at the hands of their own man. You have Alessandro Nesta, one of the great Italian defenders of his time, injured. You have Fabio Grosso on the left-back role, subbed in for Zambrotta, who moved across flanks, and he was one of the cult heroes for Italy in this tournament. And in amongst that, of course, you have Fabio Cannavaro, the great wall of Dortmund. And Italy, in the end, wouldn't concede a single goal from open play, at least from the hands of their opposition. We spoke of earlier a great Italian front line with the likes of Totti, Del Piero, etc., etc., Inzaghi. Here we had a new slew of attackers. Vincenzo Iaquinta, Alberto Gilardino, Luca Toni as well. And through the group phases, after fairly slow starts, even though 7 points, it was fairly unspectacular against the Czechs, Ghanaians and Americans. They ended the hopes of Australia fairly cruelly in the last 16. Totti's 95th minute penalty put in pay to them, and of course the goals of Luca Toni, who remarkably scored a double against Ukraine in the quarterfinals, was as comfortable as a quarterfinal could be in a World Cup. Germany, they were the opponents in the semi-finals. They were the hosts, and after their poorest string of tournaments ever, backed by a wave of support and the beginning of a revolution by Jürgen Klinsmann, who is probably seen as not a great managerial figure, not key for stability, but he did really help kickstart this revolution, essentially, for German football, which, thanks to their revolution in coaching, recruitment, scouting, and aside from saying revolution one more time, it really helped with 4 years on with the products of that in terms of the players, and was really started here by Klinsmann. They needed psychological help from Jens Lehmann in the penalty shootout against Argentina, and Argentina themselves had an exciting band of young players. You can call on the likes of Lionel Messi and Carlos Tevez alongside Pablo Aimar and Juan Román Riquelme. They were always going to be front runners, really. And in the end, it was ending on a sour note for the Albi Celeste. They would lose on penalties. They would have a bit of a brawl with Germany at the end as well. And essentially, Germany bowed out of the tournament thanks to a superb defensive display by not only Fabio Cannavaro, who's rightly the man of the match, but the entire Italian defence. And you have two of the most beautiful World Cup goals in history, really. The through the eye of the needle pass by Andrea Pirlo to find Fabio Grosso for his beautiful curler. The breaking of the deadlock in the 119th minute, so to speak. And then you had Cannavaro helping set up Alessandro Del Piero for a wonderful curled finish into the top corner just a minute later to see off the Germans on the counter-attack. So there we had, amongst the favourites of Brazil, Spain, England, Argentina, you had the final being France versus Italy, or rather, Zinedine Zidane versus Materazzi, and not just for the head, but which the Frenchman stuck on Marco Materazzi, which was his final act, at least on the pitch in football. It was obviously in the goals as well. A cheeky penalty from Zizou in the first half, for Marco Materazzi, header from a set piece to level the scores up before half-time. And of course, the match did turn on Zidane's headbutt on Materazzi. Ultimately, though, the game was won by, or rather lost by, David Trezeguet's miss in the shootout. And that man again, Fabio Grosso, the cult hero of this Italian team, scoring the winning penalty. Italy were four-time champions. France would have to wait for a second World Cup. And that second World Cup, I'm sure we'll get onto tomorrow in another World Cup rewind. Of course, we are still waiting for the World Cup final, which is just a matter of days away. Are you all excited? I'm sure you are. I am. We'll be covering the 2010s in our final rewind, the 30th episode of the World Cup Daily Podcast tomorrow. So I hope you join us for that one. And until next time, silly.
Podcast Network. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.